for your love. That love that drove you to the cross, that saw this broken world and could not hold back, but gave everything. Lord, and as we gather to remember so many people that have given everything to today, we thank you that you understand something of our pain and our suffering because you chose to enter into it and live amongst us and even take our place in dying on the cross. Amen. Please do make yourselves comfortable. I'm just really aware that when we began the service, I kind of welcomed you and I didn't say who I was, and I'm aware if you are here for the first time, you might wonder who's talking to you. My name is Chris, I'm the vicar here. I just kind of, just reiterate that welcome. I hope you can all see me. I just wanted the cross to take centre stage today because it relates very much to what I want to talk about. But so if I vanish behind it, I'm sorry. Hopefully you'll still get the voice coming out, even if you can't see me. I want to reflect on remembering today, that little phrase, we will remember, on why we remember, and how we remember. Last year, it seems to kind of, it feels like this is such a momentous time, doesn't it, as we live through this kind of succession of 100th anniversaries. Last year, I spoke a lot about the Hive disaster, which impacted Southborough and Tunbridge Wells and the surrounding area so significantly. I spoke particularly about it because it was the 100th anniversary of the sinking of the Hive. And so I reflected on it a lot. We had a memorial service on the anniversary, and it was amazing to see so many people come that had family, loved ones, connections with that, or even just with the community, and wanted to come and remember. But what struck me at that time, and kind of left me pondering, was just how many of those brought tangible objects with them. Things that reminded them of relatives, some that they'd never actually known, but they still remembered. They brought photographs. They brought newspaper cuttings. They brought medals. And at the end of that memorial service, they kind of shared them. And with them, they shared their stories. And they remembered. And those objects helped them to remember. And that kind of set me thinking about remembering, and it's also why I chose this passage. Our reading took place on the last night of Jesus' life. And he shares a final meal, we call it the Last Supper, with his friends. It was the Passover meal, and that meal was all about remembering. Remembering God's actions on behalf of his people in history. How he had delivered them from Egypt, how he had taken them into the promised land, how he had saved his people. And that Passover was the Old Testament covenant meal, the meal they shared once a year to remember what God had done for them, how he had acted on their behalf. And to this day, when Jewish people gather together at Passover, they retell that story of God's actions on their behalf. And if I could have the next slide up. As Jesus shares that meal, he takes bread and he kind of departs from the pattern of a Passover. And he breaks the bread. And he prays over it. He gives thanks for it. And then he shares it with them. And he says, "This is my body. Do this in remembrance of me. My body given for you." And Jesus is about to give his life the next day is the cross, his death. He's about to go out into the night, be arrested, tried, tortured, and ultimately die. And he walks to it willingly. But he leaves with them a tangible token, something to help them remember and understand the significance of the actions. And it's that meal that becomes the basis of the kind of the new covenant family meal, when we share communion as church, when we give and receive bread and wine. It's accepting and receiving what Jesus did for us on the cross. It's about remembering again his actions in eternity for us. And so today is also about remembering. We live in a fast-changing world. And if you're like me, I think it's perhaps it's just get older, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to, you know, kind of put that on anyone else. I just feel like I struggle with change more than I used to. I used to kind of like change. Now I'm not quite so sure about it. I'm certainly not quite so sure about some of the changes that are taking place in our world at this time. And I'm not sure that they're all for the better. But actually, I've been here 24 years. Kind of, we've celebrated remembrance many times in this church over that period. What strikes me is one of the changes that is positive is that actually people take that more seriously now than I remember them doing a few years ago. Maybe the conflicts that we've lived through as a nation, the losses that we've received as a nation, and you know, we can still remember when bodies were coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq and we were seeing the mourning of families, it drove it home. But certainly there's a greater sense of wanting to stop and honour and remember than perhaps there was a few years ago. I love the fact that the school come down here and they look at the memorials. They want to understand what happened in their community and the people that made a sacrifice and the links that they have with it. It feels like remembering is all the more significance. On Armistice Day on Friday, we had our breakfast caf. It was great that people at the caf wanted to stay late so they could be in church for the 2 minute silence. And they kind of spanned every age from kind of 18 upwards to kind of, I won't even speculate on the oldest. But they wanted to stop and remember. It mattered to them. Remembering those who gave everything for us and for our nation. And in a moment we'll use these words. Could I have the next slide, Rob? Let us remember before God those who died for their country in war, those whom we knew and loved, those whose memory we treasure, and all who have lived and died in the service of mankind. We don't have a meal to help us remember. I suspect many of you have tangible things that help you remember. I'll talk about a couple of mine in a moment, but we wear poppies. We do things that help us remember, that choose to honour those that gave so much for us. And this year, remembrance falls during what would be the 100th anniversary of the Battle of the Somme. A few events have the power to bring into focus the enormity of the sacrifice of many, many people on our behalf than that battle. I was just struck when they were talking about it on Armistice Day on the news. Could we have the next slide, Rob? Thank you. Among things that kind of I saw and thought I would love to go there and see this was this art installation in Bristol. It's called The Shrouds. And each kind of little dot you can see there is a model wrapped in a small shroud. And it commemorates the Somme. And it does it by commemorating the first day of the Somme when 19,240 young men gave their lives. And there are 19,000 shrouds laid out in that installation. It's a battle that didn't just rage for one day, though. It raged from July to November of 1916, with over a million casualties in one battle. It's just hard to get your head around that sense of loss and the grief that that would have brought to so many. A battle that was meant to end the war, but sadly remembered for the suffering and the waste of life more than anything else. Friedrich Steinbacher said, "The Somme, the whole history of the world, cannot contain a more ghastly word." Someone else said later, "The Somme remains the most harrowing place name in the history of the British Commonwealth." As we think about remembering, I have to say it's not without personal significance for my family. I'm young enough, or old enough, I'm not quite sure which way around it is, to be able to remember my grandfather who served on the Somme. Perhaps we could have the slide up, thanks. This is my granddad. He was Granddad Bill. I was very young when he died, but I can still remember him. He must have signed up at 18. He was on the Somme, and that was where his war ended. He lost an arm on the Somme. I said I have kind of things that are tangible memories. I haven't brought down his mechanical hand. I've just kind of gone with the picture. It's actually quite practical. It's a great clamp. Sorry. I'm going to get in trouble with my mother when I go home. I can feel it coming on. I guess he was one of the lucky ones because he escaped with his life. But it's also, I think, worth reflecting on the survivors too. When he somehow recovered from the loss of an arm, he had what was a guaranteed job. He worked for OXO. He ended up being kind of like a site foreman for OXO. I still feel a bit disloyal if I use Bovril cubes. But it's interesting, kind of, equal rights wasn't a big thing in the world in which we lived then. So kind of, although that job was there to begin with, once the government's support went, the jobs went. If you couldn't do the job of an able-bodied man as a disabled man, then you wouldn't keep that job. And it just makes you think of the impact on the lives, not just of those that were bereaved, but those that somehow had to make sense of life changed completely by war because they carried it with them in their own bodies. World War I was called the war to end wars. And sadly, that's far from the case. Again, it's amazing what you see on the news, isn't it, really? I was staggered when they said on the news this week that this is only the second year since World War II when there hasn't been a death in service for a British serviceman. Apparently 1968 was the other year, in case you ever want that answer at a pub quiz. It's staggering, isn't it, to comprehend that it goes on and it goes on and it goes on. Our airmen are still in action over Iraq and Syria. And whilst we might be relieved, and the year isn't over yet, is it? Let's be honest. That we've had a year without losses in that way. It doesn't mean that our world is a safer or a more peaceful place. And it doesn't mean that others aren't suffering the same sorts of losses that we've experienced at different times in our history. War continues to rage in Syria. It's hard to get one's head around what it must be like to be trapped within Aleppo at this time. And as so is so often the case, and more so now probably than ever in the world in which we live, it seems to be the most vulnerable, it seems to be the civilians, it seems to be the women and the children that now suffer the most. And we could list place after place. Mosul, Raqqa. If we move away from Iraq and Syria, if we go to Africa, a place that's dear to the hearts of many of us, southern Sudan is split by civil war. And we heard of atrocities there again this week. People are fleeing for their lives. Yemen, yet another civil war where there's no food. So even if you're affected by the war, you're affected by malnutrition. Where one power that is more powerful than another, you know, sees fit to pound the people of that nation to bits. And these are just the ones that are deemed newsworthy. We live in a broken world, and suffering isn't something that's confined to history. Well, we as a nation have lived in comparative peace and safety as a result of the sacrifice of our servicemen and women. We could still be forgiven for wondering what it would take to bring it all to an end. And that the brokenness of the world comes to our doorstep. You know, you can't divorce the refugee crisis that is facing our world with from the events that I've been describing. So many people's lives have been turned upside down. And the trouble is, isn't it, that it is never black and white, isn't it? I mean, anyone who's tried to write essays about the cause of the First World War, you can kind of trace this history of alliances and actions and all of those things. But kind of, you know, to identify the good guys and the bad guys actually gets quite difficult. You know, it's insanity, really. But actually, in the day in which we live, the world in which we live, everything just seems to get more and more blurred and more unclear. It's not nations one finds oneself being opposed by or opposing. It's groups, people that nebulously appear and do damage or slip away after acts of terrorism. Suddenly it's extremism and terrorism that are the challenges we face. So we live in a world that has rising levels of fear and of anxiety and uncertainty. And the sad truth, and this isn't meant to be a comment on what's happened across the other side of the Atlantic, but you can't legislate or elect people to change the world in which we live. We can't legislate for peace. Neither will we bring it about by force of arms. We only see the reality of history to know that that's the case. And so today it's about remembering, but we remember with this sense of pain because it feels like when so many sacrifices have been made, actually we should live in a better world, but at times it doesn't feel like we do. And I just really want to come back to this passage as I draw to a close now. Because it seems to me it has some interesting threads that can help us make sense of this world we live in at this time. Like today, as I've said, it's all about remembering. Jesus gives us a visual aid to remind us of what he's going to do. That his body was going to be broken, and it was going to be broken for us. And whenever we share that bread and wine as church family, we remember that. We live with that day by day. He walks willingly to his death, and as he breaks the bread, he tells them to remember his example, his body broken on the cross. And it's hard to get our head around someone who would, today is all about getting our heads around the fact that so many people have willingly given their lives for our nation, but it's hard to make sense of. And it's hard to make sense of why God would take our flesh, enter into our humanity, and walk willingly and knowingly to that sacrifice. This is what Paul says about it. Could I have the next slide, Rob? Thank you. Very rarely will anyone die for a righteous person, though for a good person, someone might possibly dare to die. I guess today is about remembering many that have dared to die. But then Paul goes on and says, but God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. It means when we remember his death, we also need to remember the why. It's because of the brokenness of this world. It's because of the warped nature of the human heart that can on one hand do good, but on the other hand wreak evil, that Jesus gives his life. It's because actually for this world to be changed, people's lives and people's hearts need to be changed. And if there's a second thread in this, it's actually about who one extends that love to, because he extends it to everyone. Those who are his friends, and even those who turn against him. Judas sits at table as Jesus breaks the bread. It's a gift. The Bible word is grace. It's something that's undeserved, and yet it's given freely. It's given for us who live in peace. It's given for those that sit in horror, besieged in Aleppo. It's even given for those that choose to bomb and wreak havoc. That's God's generosity. And ultimately, the only thing that can change our world. Amen.